Welcome to the podcast. Join Nate and Mike, lifelong friends, as they discuss stocks and investing. The name says it all. This is Two Buds Talk Stocks. All opinions expressed by Nate and Mike are their own. Please do not buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear.
Welcome to the pod. We're live. How are you doing today, Mike?
You know, I'm doing really good. I just want to say real quick, thoughts and prayers to everyone impacted over in Europe. Just want to make that quick comment and then we can start talking some stocks.
Absolutely.
So I'm doing fantastic. I've been waiting all week to hear, welcome to the pod. We are live. How are you doing, Mike?
That's like our catchphrase. I've never listened to another pod that's done that. I mean, there's actually no need to do it.
Aren't live.
I know. It's like I'm doing sports radio. But yeah, it's kind of our thing now, right?
I hope our listeners enjoy it. And I realize sometimes I get all fired up. I don't ask how you are doing.
You know, I am doing well myself. It's a beautiful day outside. Weather's been great here. How about you? You have good weather this week?
Yeah, we had 70 degrees yesterday, ran some miles. Got up 5:45 today, did some lifting, going to run some more today. So spring's on its corner.
Yeah. Cold weather coming up our way here, though, this weekend. But I really enjoyed the nice weather getting out myself. I've been doing a lot with the kids. My partner, she's out of town this week, so I've been getting them to and from school, making them dinner. I'm enjoying the quality time with them.
Do you, deep down, when there's like a snowstorm coming down, like, well, better just sit around and watch Netflix all day?
You know, I'm actually not a big fan of snow days like that because they actually always seem to happen when we have the kids. They spend time with their dad as well. And snow days with three boys in a house, there's no Netflix downtime. It's basically just a lot of fighting and arguing or going to play in the snow and then coming in and tracking snow all over the house and everything else too. So I would actually prefer not to have snow days because they always happen when I have three rambunctious boys.
There you go. So I was going to do a corner called Mike's Moves.
All right.
So here's the thing. We've been talking a lot about dollar cost averaging. I've been doing more dollar cost averaging where you buy a stock at 100, it goes to 95, you buy it again at 95, it goes to 65, you buy it again at 65, it goes to 108, you buy it again at 108. And the returns that you can have can be very profitable for your portfolio. I've actually noticed, because it's been a tough year, like we said it was going to be, choppy year, and this is before the war even started as well, that I think dollar cost averaging is really the way to handle a market like this. I've found, though, when I've been dollar cost averaging the Vanguard Financial ETF, the Vanguard Dividend Appreciation ETF, which I want to talk about later, and the Vanguard Healthcare ETF, and then, you know, for people that maybe have a lot of exposure, maybe the Vanguard VOO S&P 500 ETF, that when I'm dollar cost averaging those mutual funds, I feel a lot more confident, a lot more safe, and knowing that it's really, I can do it without hesitation, whether it's $5 here, $15 here, $1,500 here, whatever the case may be, you can essentially do it knowing, because like when you take these ETFs, if a company is going bankrupt or isn't performing, they'll just take it out of the fund and they'll put it in, replace it with something else. And the reason why I've been doing that more and more lately is, you know, just ask someone in the 80s who is dollar cost averaging Sears or Kodak, you know, it's not like it's a guaranteed thing for you to make money on.
GE would be a good one. Darling of the GE.
Yeah.
Darling of the 80s. I mean, the GE outperformed the S&P from 1980 through 1990. I mean, by a landslide. I mean, Jack Welch was looked at as the best CEO. And yeah, we're I don't know what it would look like now, but not so good.
Well, it's funny with GE. I can't believe people are already rolling their eyes out there like, man, now here we go, GE rabbit hole.
So while you pull this up, a real quick stat, I read this article. To your point about the S&P 500, since 1980, 400 different companies have been removed from the S&P 500.
Whoa, say that again.
So since 1980, 400 different companies have been removed from the S&P, basically added, dropped, whether it's because of, I'm guessing things like either market cap scandals, whatever it is, price. But yes, 400 different companies have been added and removed. And yeah, if you had invested in, say, those 400 companies that were removed, a lot of times it's because of negative reasons, so your return wouldn't be as well. But if you just invested in the S&P 500 as a whole, historically something like double-digit returns, not accounting for inflation, big difference, right?
Well, and that's kind of going back to my original point is, you know, I'll tell you some of the stocks I sold, and is dollar cost averaging, the VOO, which is the S&P 500, the Vanguard version of it. You're right. I mean, if you actually dollar cost average those 500 stocks individually from 1980, you'd be down because they, you know, and now that's why leave that up to someone else. They're going to, you know, like lately I've been talking a lot with the VGI, which we can just talk about real quick here. What I love about the VGI is there's no tobacco, there's no oil in it. And most importantly, there's no AT&T in it. It's a dividend appreciation fund. And when you look at just like their top 10 holdings, you've got Microsoft, Chase, JP Morgan Chase, Johnson & Johnson, Walmart, United Health, Visa, Home Depot, Procter & Gamble, Comcast, and Oracle. And if these companies file for bankrupt or aren't performing well, or there's problems with the CEO, whatever the case may be, they're just going to replace it and throw in an Apple or whatever the case may be. The other thing too is why lately someone might ask me personally why I've been doing, I'm kind of doubling, tripling down the VHT, which is healthcare. I already listed in the VIG, there's United Health, Johnson & Johnson. I'm also doing the Vanguard Financials, which already has Chase and Visa in it. And then, so I'm kind of doing it at all sides of it. But the point is that you can throw money into it. And I'm just reiterating your point, or the research you just explained reiterates my point. You can just throw money in these mutual funds or in these ETFs, and they're going to do all the work for you.
Yeah, those Vanguard funds, they also have the lowest expense ratio too. Enemy of investors is expenses that we pay. And those funds that you're listing, the VHT and the financial one, the other nice thing about that is those are just the same companies from that sector that are in the S&P 500 fund. So if you wanted to get even more granular and say you didn't want to invest in the S&P 500 for reasons like tobacco or other sin stocks, you could just pick the actual Vanguard sector. If you just wanted to invest in healthcare or financials or technology, or if you wanted just energy, you could get all the oil stocks by just buying their funds. So that's another way to even get more granular.
Well, it's funny. I had they are going to rename nameless because they are avid listeners of the pod. I had an anonymous person ask me about a aerospace and defense ETF, and the expense ratio is 0.42.
It's creeping up high.
I mean, compared to 0.0001 that Vanguard has, I mean, you have to not only outpace what your portfolio is doing, but you have to make sure to cover that expense ratio. It's like the juice if you're gambling.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So do you want to talk a little GE? We haven't talked GE in a long time. Or no, you can do whatever you want.
I was just going to say,
we can make it quick.
We can talk. Well, let's talk. Have we talked about this, that GE, the CEO of the 80s, Jack Welch, that he might be single-handedly responsible for where GE is now. And it's only with time and perspective that it becomes clear that when he's making deals in the 80s to buy things like RCA, which at that time owned NBC. That's how GE originally got the NBC company, was from deals like that. But really all Jack Welch wanted was RCA, the electronics division, that they get a TV network along with it. But it was just careful manipulation of the quarterly earnings. I mean, GE beat every single quarter year over year. And in the 80s, you had things like the savings and loan scandal. You had the Black Monday in 87, the crash. There's all sorts of other stuff. Towards the end of the decade, I mean, I think there was still some conflict starting in Europe similar to now that could have affected it. But it was one of those things that how did they always manage to beat And I was just careful manipulation, just juicing the numbers, just right inside the lines of how to do things. And it was always just another merger or acquisition to get growth going. And looking back, it seems pretty obvious now it's in this position where it is. They had so many businesses and they're divesting them all now, but their debt load is so heavy. And you just think about a huge ship and trying to turn it around now. It's like a really hard monumental task, but it seems like it all started in the 80s with Jack Welch.
Do you know July 1st in 2000, what one share of GE was trading at?
July 1st of 2000?
Yep.
Are we doing split adjusted or dividend we adjusted? Are.
Correct.
It's higher than it is now.
$444 a share.
And what's it trading at today?
$88. But they were so bad, GE, when a company does a
split reversal yeah.
so that they can still be on the S&P 500.
Yes.
I mean, the old saying was you could never get fired by putting your clients in GE. And good God, the fall from great. They're splitting. They're selling off all the companies.
Yeah. I mean,
it's probably one of the biggest. Go ahead. I felt like I was cutting you off. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the same thing. How many businesses they're divesting? I think it's their healthcare unit right now that they're sticking in. And then their engine business. They make a lot of industrial parts, airplane engines. I mean, those are the two big ones that I think are in GE. And aren't they even doing that deal with J&J that they're part of that company that they're spinning off? It's going to be simpler.
I own GE for years and I would dollar cost average GE and buy it because whenever you could. And I remember buying it at $9 in 2008. And I thought it was a financial genius, but I had to give up, and any article that has GE in it, I refuse to read it. And the point I'm getting at is if we were doing the pod in 2001, 2000, all the way to 2008, 2009, we'd be praising how awesome it is to dollar cost average GE. And I'm just kind of saying, look, if you mess with your portfolio too much, it's like a bar of soap. You'll have nothing left. If you're dollar cost averaging Apple today, who knows where Apple will be in 15, 20 years. And I'm just using GE as an example that just because you're dollar cost averaging doesn't mean you're going to come out it's not a guarantee you're going to come out on the other end.
If you invest in the S&P 500, GE gets booted out, it goes bankrupt. They just put another company in there that replaces it. And it's a small percentage of the overall portfolio. I don't notice it. If you went even more granular and you just bought the industrial section of a fund that tracks the industrials of the S&P, the same thing. GE is going to be a percentage in that. It's probably going to be a larger percentage based on the fewer number of holdings. But again, something goes wrong with it, you drop it, they put something else in. So it's more of that same thing. It's just somebody else is doing the work for you. Just let the index do it.
So you're talking 80s. 90s GE. Producer Tom says you've got a great story about Apple 80s, 90s. Lay it on me.
Yes.
Kind of the reverse.
So if we have, what was your thing? Mike's Corner or whatever. We have Nate's story time back in the day. Cue the music, the harps going to story time. I was reading this article and it was, this is something that you and I have never seen because we only started investing in the days of the internet and electronic trades. But this guy had posted a screenshot of his actual trade where they sent him, and it looked like it's on an old dot matrix printer, and he gets it in the mail and it's the confirmation of his trade. And it was dated January 18th of 1990. He's buying Apple. It shows that he buys 200 shares. It's got Apple, it's got the ticker symbol, but then it shows the price. And this is how old school it is. It's in fractions. It's 33 and a quarter. He buys 200 shares. And with the commissions, it was something like $6,750 he spent. And the whole point of the article was that he sold it after a few years. So I was going back and looking at some charts of Apple. And the first 3 years after he bought it in January of 90, it was crushing. It was up 3 years in a row. And then the next year, it's down 54%. So he's already underwater. And then basically it treads for a few more years in the 90s, and it goes down even more. Into the 90s, we have the dot-com boom. Apple suffered as well. Early 2000s, nothing. Steve Jobs comes back in the early 2000s. And that's really what you and I think of Apple now is the era of the iPhone and the iPod and everything since. Long story short, had he held those shares, that's $6,750 with dividends reinvested and adjusted for the stock splits, $4.7 million. But as I said, in the 90s, that stock did not do much of anything. It was really down. And I don't know, you and I, if I would have had the fortitude to hold through it. Thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, and that's what's tough is it's all about strikes and gutters. You know, I did kind of peel off some of my Clorox, FedEx, and PayPal holdings to put into ETFs just because of the volatile market that we're in. And who's to say that in 10, 15 years where PayPal may be, and it could be an Apple like that. I guess, you know, my point, what to say about it is just, we just took two companies, GE and Apple, and we started both in the 80s. And it's just amazing how what can happen, how you can the fall from grace and then, you know, to becoming nothing to the complete reversal where you're becoming a behemoth, where everyone, whether you have mutual funds or not, has Apple exposure. It got me to thinking when I was at maybe I've told the story before, I was at Target, which by the way, Target crushed their numbers. Mm-hmm. Growth looked great. CEO looked good. I like the $25 per share or $25 per hour that they're paying now their employees. I like that they're going to do you listen to the conference call where the guy said, you know, the pickup, the curbside, mm-hmm. they're going to make it to where you can put in your Starbucks order
and they'll bring that out,
you know, bring out the Starbucks order.
That's really cool. Also, I've used that Target drive up delivery. It actually is really slick. Yeah. That'll be cool. You can put your order in there too.
But like, you know, I was at Target looking at puzzles, mm-hmm. clears the mind, helps dementia, right? Find this puzzle. Kodak makes puzzles. And it's like the fall from grace of Kodak to where you're like making puzzles, you know? So I don't really have any thoughts on that. It's just that's what makes the market tough.
So I would say one other thing on this, talking about two companies of the 80s and even going into the 90s, GE was still a real big company. But
huge.
This can, if you look at it this way, you could say if you just wanted to get real simple and you had done a 50-50 portfolio of GE and Apple, you would have diversification there. And where GE is now and where Apple is, you'd still be, I don't know how many multiples you would be up. But the thing that's really tough about that is that GE was still a behemoth at that time, but Apple was probably not in the tech sector. So I don't know if you were looking to invest in stalwart companies at that era, to say another tech company, what would it be that was still one of the biggest companies? I'm thinking Big Blue probably would have been the more tech stalwart at that time that you would have been looking at. And even that today is not nearly what it was and is really underperformed the market. So this just gets to the whole point of, I'm going to segue a little here, that we think of Apple, Amazon, Netflix, basically the FANG stocks are some of the biggest as far as market cap goes. But realistically, in 20 years time, is it going to be those companies that are still the biggest in the world, or is it going to be something else? So, I mean, you and I, we can crush it now with Apple, we can crush it with Amazon, but there may be a day too where
we're
looking back at the glory days of when that was. And that's the reason why I personally always like to have smaller companies, very growth oriented. I mean, they're just taking a beating now, but maybe one of them comes through and I'm able to tell a story of holding it. And it's become a
hundred bagger. Well, that comes just down to one word, diversification. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me and what I love about my portfolio is I've got the ETFs we talked about. I've got the Apple, I have the Google, I have the Amazon, I have the Netflix. I also have the Shopify, the DocuSign. I have these growth companies in there as well too. And that's where it comes down to diversifying. Is a boring owning Procter & Gamble and Waste Management? It is, but then, or is it, you know, these ETFs and then having fun. I have some speculative stocks in there as well too. I still have my Portillo's, which is down 70% since I bought it. Mm-hmm. That's why it's important to have, diversification. And to me, goes back to earlier points I've made, 85% of my entire portfolio is all in essentially S&P 500 mutual funds.
Yep.
The other 15%, when we're digesting Clorox or FedEx or DocuSign or PayPal, these companies, that's only 15% of my portfolio.
This is one thing I've been trying to do as well, is been trying to consolidate my portfolio. I mean, I like that I can invest with fractional shares, so I can put smaller dollar amounts. And I mean, I think I said this way back in the day on one of our early podcasts, but I actually think of them as lottery tickets, but lottery tickets that are going to have a better chance of paying off. And with fractional shares, you can invest as little as $1. So sometimes I'll just gather a bunch of money and I'll spread that wealth with just a dollar in each of them and continue to do that. Maybe these companies continue to grow and do well. Maybe they go by the wayside, but again, it's no $1 is going to make or break the portfolio.
Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Buy, sell, and hold. Cisco, Disney, and GE.
Ooh, it's a good one. So you just dropped some knowledge on me with Cisco. I did not know that they were buying Splunk.
Hold on, disclaimer. There's talks of them
buying
it. And the CEO said they're looking at all acquisitions and but they are heavily looking. It's not official. It's not done. But there was rumors they were going to buy it for $20 billion, which, what's Splunk again? That's
it's SPLK. I used to, little story time, I used to own Splunk.
Really? What did you get out of it?
I told this story before. It's worth reiterating. This is a good piece of knowledge for all the listeners. Because I buy fractional shares, a lot of times I do not have full shares. You just keep adding up little fractional shares. I had moved one of my brokerage accounts. I moved to a different one. And when I did this, I did not realize that if you have fractional shares, it is less than one. If you have more than one share, fractional shares, all your shares will get transferred over. But if your fractional shares add up to less than one, if you move a brokerage, it'll just be liquidated into cash. So I actually lost some of those, who knows, potential lottery tickets. And I'm guessing Splunk, if Cisco does make the offer, it would be a huge premium to what it is. So I'll have to go back and look to see.
Yeah, they were thinking it was going to be $20 billion. And I forget what Splunk is. They're a software company, right? But
they do data scraping. So it's a really fascinating business. Basically, companies, they sell widgets, whatever it is, and they want to see everything from their customer base to their average cost to get a customer, all that data that people would just try to go. So Splunk just scrapes it all. They make software that just scrapes all the data from your servers, and you can sort it and arrange it however you want. So you can see your list of customers, you can see your prices, your costs, all that. And then, of course, getting information. This is the big thing for consumers, is knowing what the consumer wants before they actually know. And Splunk, again, with their software, the way they scrape the data, it gets all that information. So ideally, the company knows everything about you, their product, and the pricing, so that they can
be, I think, profitable. That, well, and here's the news. So right now, Hellman and Friedman's, they actually bought 7.5% of Splunk. This came out today. Shares of Splunk, like many software companies, are down. Splunk got a short-lived boost from news that Cisco Systems has discussed an acquisition for more than $20 billion, but the talk stopped last month. Mm. I still think they might do it. Those things don't happen overnight.
It's like business too. And I mean, the bread and butter of Cisco's business is still the hardware, but hardware more expensive, margins lower. Software, much higher margin. So I could understand why they do that. And it would be an easy tuck-in acquisition. So back to your buy, sell, and hold.
Well, I want to take GE out, because I know, I mean, that stinks. I'm trying to think of a company. Because I was surprised what you said about Cisco or about Disney. So I'll go Cisco and I'll go what were we just talking? I'll go Splunk, Cisco, and Disney.
I would sell Disney.
Wow, selling Disney. That means you're not selling Cisco.
That means, I'm probably just going to hold Splunk again. Who knows? Maybe it'll it'll be profitable at some point. And then, yeah, your favorite right there in the technology / communication sector, I'd buy Cisco. Rock solid dividend right now. I think they've increased it something like 10 plus years in a row. Still yep. generate lots of cash.
And I like that. Here's my other thing with Cisco. Look, these growth stocks, CrowdStrike, I'm sorry if I'm struggling with those other cybersecurity, CRM, even Salesforce, they need to sustain huge amounts of growth. And if they don't have those growth, like a CrowdStrike, they're going to go down 25%. Mm-hmm. And Cisco, and I just can't stomach any more of that. I already own Shopify. I already own DocuSign. I owned PayPal. Though I know everyone has their own growth stock problems out there, but I wanted to have exposure to cybersecurity, to a company that isn't going to go down 25% in one mm-hmm. day. That's why I went with Cisco. One of the many reasons I went with Cisco.
Cybersecurity, I think, is only going to be more and more relevant, especially when we think where we are geopolitically. But I was listening to this other podcast and they were talking about how small companies, and this made news, was it a couple of months ago when that pipeline was shut down? Remember some hackers shut down the pipeline and then they wanted the Bitcoin payoff.
Yeah,
that's how they do it. And this happens apparently with smaller businesses all the time. Smaller businesses, this happens pretty regularly for one reason, because they're secure. Their technology doesn't have the security in place, and they usually don't have the budget, and terrorists that attack just usually do a small enough dollar amount where they know it's the company, instead of ramping up their security, is actually just going to pay that. So they can just keep hitting the same customers over and over, so to speak. It is easier to pay $10,000 over the course of several times than to invest in the infrastructure to protect it. But I do think that this is going to happen. And the number one reason these attacks have is because of, it's something 80% of them happen because two-factor authentication isn't in place. I'm trying to do this a lot more on my apps, financial stuff, where you either get the text code or you can use an authenticator like Google Authenticator, and you put in that. But that's the number one thing that I was listening. So even this isn't just stock related, just for our listeners, two-factor authentication on all your financial stuff. And apparently it cuts down the risk of cyber attacks tremendously.
Yep. Well, Nate, keep crushing out there. That's all I had for today. And it's always great talking to you. Why don't you? Because I don't want to do it. Why don't you tell everyone how they can get a hold of us?
Yes, you can get a hold of us on the socials. Drop us a line on our favorite stock of the year, Gmail, twobudstalkstock@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at @twobudstalkstocks, Instagram for pictures at @twobudstalkstocks. And if you listen to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review. Spread the word. Till next time, everybody. Talk to you then. Take it easy, buddy.
Yeah, see you, bud.